This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in. Today we're doing things a bit differently. We're going to be playing a recording from the Stitching Solidarity Project back in December 2024, we had a Reading Palestine poetry event at the Athenaeum and Mechanics Institute, and we invited local poets Hera Lindsay Bird, Ruchi Vitus, and Lindley Edemans to do a reading. So we're going to be playing that reading to you now, finally, 2 years later. For those of you who weren't sure what this was about, so the Stitching Solidarity Project brought together contributions from artists across Aotearoa, and offering a solidarity with the people of Palestine. The quilt captures an expression of outrage at the ongoing violence in Gaza and the West Bank and hope for a future built on justice and self-determination. So yeah, we hope you enjoy these readings.
Tonight, I'm just going to read a couple poems from Fadi Judah. So Fadi Judah, this book came out last year. Fadi Judah is a Palestinian-American poet and physician as well, and translator. And this book, which doesn't have a title, was written in 6 weeks after the war began in October of 2023. I am astounded at these poems by the fact that not only writing in that immediacy, as Fadi cataloged also losing so many of his family members, you know, being in the U.S. working, but how many that he had to, you know, just that constant grief. And I think these poems, this book, I highly recommend it. They're beautiful poems. They're about love. They're about gardening. They're about grief. And I think how measured they are speaks to how this is just ongoing for decades. I'll just read two poems. One of them's a little bit longer. And I highly recommend looking up YouTube videos of Fadi reading and getting this book. And I think we'll hear it from many other lovely Palestinian poets tonight. My Mises. This morning, I don't know how, an inch-long baby frog entered my house during the extermination of human animals live on TV. I recognized the baby's dread. It leapt into shadows under the couch, into my shoe. My son was watching, gently, patiently. I followed it on my knees with shattered heart and plastic bag. Coaxed it, caught it, released it into the yard and started to cry. And out of nowhere, a girl receives an ovation from her rescuers, all men, on their knees and bellies, clearing the man-made rubble with their bare hands disfigured by dust into ghosts. All disasters are natural, including this one, because humans are natural. The rescuers tell her she's incredible, powerful, and for a split second before the weight of her family's disappearance sinks her, she smiles, like a child who lived for 7 years above the ground receiving praise. This is dedication. To those whose memory, imagination, and bodies are my memory, imagination, and body. From the collective to the one under the same assault, no matter our location on earth. Our bodies have different ways of knowing, but our bodies know. To the martyrs who witness from above, and the living who witness on the ground. To those who will be killed on the last day of the war, to those who will be killed on the first day after the war ends, to those who succumb in the humanitarian window of horror an hour before the pause, a minute after, to those who die of a broken heart during and after the war, to those who gather their families to die together so that no survivor suffers survival alone, to those who scatter their families so that they're not all wiped out from the civil record, to the babies whose death certificates marked their brief presence on Earth before their birth certificates could be issued, they were not given names, to the elderly who endured 1948 and lived to see their descendants erased, to the young born under the sign of siege and are the only members of their families left. Will you stand up and form a small nation? To those who died because dialysis was no longer possible, no water, electricity, and fuel. You were murdered. To those who will develop kidney stones and liver failure from unclean water, to diarrhea, cold, and flu, to those who are maimed and will search for their missing limbs underground across borders and won't find their extremities after they find them, to those whose cherubic hearts couldn't handle the shock, and to those whose nicotine hearts blocked the flow, you too were killed. To those who were killed because they refused to leave their homes to live in tents, to those who were killed on their way to the tents, to those who were killed in their tents with the cats they sheltered, to those who were killed in UN shelters and in schools, to those who were killed because they were medics, nurses, doctors, teachers, coders, and decoders, and the last honest journalists, to those who thought their biggest fear was to outlive their children, to those who are free of the fear of death because tyranny spoke its final answer and it was total, to those in a concentration camp the size of a metropolis, the only life they knew, to Jerusalem and Jenin, to Jenin and Jerusalem, to the children who played in the craters the bombs made, if the sand was right. The bodies we count are not the bodies we retrieve from the river to the sea, and the bodies we retrieve are not always identifiable. To those who guard their dead from the starving dogs of war who are different from the dogs of war that starved them, to those who cannot guard the corpses from rats, to those who rummage through the rubble for clothes, gloves, forks, plates, soap, toothpaste, and wooden furniture to burn for cooking and to keep warm. They will not accept your apology after the genocide, O theology of empire. To diapers, scissors, sanitary pads, to shoes, prenatal care, and onesies, to beards and headscarves, to erased archives that housed centuries, to pulverized libraries, to St. Porphyrus and the Omari Mosque, and to those who hold vigils day and night for a hand sticking out of a crack in the wreckage, wave to us. Can you wave to us, they say? And she does, and it buoys them from the river to the sea. To those who have never heard her voice and loved her in silence, to those who cried over the animals they left behind, some cows, some goats, many chickens and ducks, and to the ducks and chickens that starving dogs did not spare, to the roosters crowing over the rhythmic blasts, to starlings, sparrows, seabirds, sardine and mullet, to mules and donkeys dying of a thousand cuts, who's whispering in your ears? To the horses led from stable rubble to rubble stable, to palm trees, za'atar, basil, and tomatoes that weapons poisoned, to palm trees, the natural reserve for the phoenix ashes, to olive oil, preserver of time, to natural gas reserves, may you be a stake through the heart of vampires, to flour, bread, and bakeries, to those who did not fulfill American media's requests to boil the ocean, those who couldn't celebrate their birthdays with cake and candles during the massacre, to the martyrs who did not furnish their photos for their killers to air them on their compassionate TV, to the martyrs who did not speak English, to the relatable and unrelatable, the translatable and untranslatable Palestinian flesh, to those who recite the verse of return, to those whose minds have shattered into shrapnel nothing can remove from their souls, to those with dementia, May it save you from the full scale of terror. To forgetfulness when a mercy. To remembrance when a mercy. To crutches and wheelchairs. To those who composed songs and sang them to the syncopated thuds of annihilation. To life. To light. The light is dead. Long live the light. To those who prayed in the pitch black night to the power of God, the only power available to them, but could not meditate on moon and stars. To those who found a way to fall in love, make love, construct a romance, a secret rendezvous, hold a wedding, and dream of moon and stars. To those who insist on homing their pigeons during the war. Have your pigeons come home? To those. We are not afraid of love from the river to the sea. Thank you.
Kia ora tato. Ko Lindley toku ingoa. I've got a couple of poems to read. And thank you to the organisers, and thank you for the invitation. It feels like a real honour. And it seems strange to walk through this mass of Christmas celebrations outside to come in here and have a kind of moment of quiet. But it's a bit of a refuge, actually, amidst the madness. And in the following on from Rushi, the poem I'm going to read is kind of incantatory as well, and I realised in listening to that beautiful piece, there's something about the incantation, the repetition, that is of use, I think, in these times. And this is actually an excerpt from a much longer poem by the Lebanese poet Itul Adnan, and the full poem is about 15 pages. I'm not going to read that, so I'll just read an excerpt. But if you are interested, you can find it online. And it's called To Be in a Time of War. To say nothing, to do nothing, mark time, to bend, to straighten up, to blame oneself, to stand, to go toward the window, to change one's mind in the process, to return to one's chair, to stand again, to go to the bathroom, to close the door, to then open the door, to go to the kitchen, to not eat nor drink, to return to the table, to be bored, to take a few steps on the rug, to come close to the chimney, to look at, to find it dull, to turn left until the main door, to come back to the room, to hesitate, to go on, just a bit, to trifle, to stop, to pull the right side of the curtain, then the other side, to stare at the wall. To look at the watch, the clock, the alarm clock, to listen to the ticking, to think about how to look again, to go to the tap, to open the refrigerator, to close it, to open the door, to feel the cold, to close the door, to feel hungry, to wait for dinner time, to go to the kitchen, to open the fridge, to take out the cheese, to open the door, to take out a knife, to carry the cheese and enter the dining room, to rest the plate on the table, to lay the table for one, to sit down, to cut the cheese in four servings, to take a bite, to introduce the cheese in the mouth, to chew and swallow, to forget to swallow, to daydream, to chew again, to go back to the kitchen, to wipe one's mouth, to wash one's hands, to dry them, to put the cheese back into the refrigerator, to close that door, to let go of the day. To listen to the radio, to put it off, to walk a bit, to think, to give up thinking, to look for the key, to wonder, to do nothing, to regret the passing of time, to look for a solution, to want to go to the beach, to tell that the sun is coming down, to hurry, to go down with the key, to try to open the door, to sit, to pull in the door, put in the key, turn it on, heat the engine, to listen, to make sure nobody's around, to pull back, to go ahead, to turn right, then left, to drive straight on, follow the road, to try and feel happy, to try and look at the ocean, to try to go up the hill, to try to reach the other side, to go straight, to stop, to make sure the ocean has not disappeared, to feel lucky, the ocean has not disappeared. To stop the ocean, to open the door, to exit, to close the door, to appreciate the breeze, to advance into the waves. To wake up, to stretch, to get out of bed, to dress, to stagger towards the window, to be ecstatic about the garden's beauty, to observe the quality of the light, to distinguish the roses from the hyacinths, to wonder if it rained in the night, to try and establish contact with the mountain, to notice its colour, to see if the clouds are moving, to stop, to go to the kitchen, to grind some coffee, to light the gas, to heat the water, to hear it boiling, to make the coffee, to put off the gas, to pour the coffee, decide to have some milk, to bring out the bottle, pour the milk, heat it, to be careful, to pour, to mix the coffee with the milk, to feel the heat, to bring the cup to one's mouth, to drink again, to face the day's chores, to stand and go to the kitchen, to come back and put the radio on, to bring the volume up, and to hear that the war against Iraq has started. To get more and more impatient, to be hungry, to bite one's nails, to try on a jacket, to open the door, to walk down the hill, to look at the bay, to see the boats, notice a big sailboat, to go on walking, to be breathless, to turn left and then right, to wait, to rest one's elbows on the table, to pull them back, to order to drink, to be through, to wipe one's mouth, to read the bill, to count, to think graciously, to exit and to start the road uphill. And it goes on in a beautiful way to kind of perform, I think, the pain of much of what's going on, obviously not just in Iraq, but beyond, throughout the Levant. I'm going to read a poem by Mousab Abu Toha, who's a Palestinian poet. This is called Edward Said, Noam Chomsky, and Theodore Adorno in Gaza. Dust tiptoes in a standing ovation after the explosion. Light hits the icy earth, fades into the town's potholes. Edward Said is out of place again. His books fall from my shelves onto the broken window glass. Palestine is also out of place. Its map falls off my wall. Edward's exile bleeds again of wars, of continued estrangement. Chomsky innately repairs the wounded words, applying bandages from his universal grammar kit. Adorno tries to study the music of the falling bomb and shattering glass. But the words slipping from the books mystify his sight and mind. The dust covers his glasses. The musical score lies breathless near his shivering feet. I recently started following this poet, Toha, on Instagram. And my Instagram feed is full of great New Zealand artists. And his images are direct from Gaza. And they are completely harrowing and therefore so important that we stop to look at them. And it's such a shock to be in that world of Instagram loveliness, which is happening out there on the street, and then to be pulled out of that into this other visual prompt. So the next poem I'm going to read is actually mine, but it's a kind of response to looking at the photograph. It was actually written for... you remember a number of years ago, there was a drowned Syrian boy that washed up off the coast of Turkey after a failed attempt to get to the Greek island of Kos. And the image became this kind of phenomenon, which symbolised so much. So the poem is called How to Rend a Photograph, and I'll read it for Abu Toha. Hold your hands out flat like a portable picnic table, the kind you keep in the back of your car that folds out from many small surfaces to become one large surface. 2. Think to yourself, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. 3. Blink a couple of times, ready your eyes. 4. Now turn your attention to the image. See water and sand and some golden hues on the crest of the water and a little boy dressed in a red shirt and blue shorts. 5. Note that the golden hues are from the sun, even though the sun is not in the frame. 6. Like some other things aren't in the frame. 7. Like the father of the little boy. 8. And the mother of the little boy. 9. And the brothers and sisters of the little boy. Like the war in Syria that made this little boy get on a boat with his family, and the waves that made him fall out of the boat, and then the waves that stopped his father from jumping in to save him, and the waves that stopped the boy from breathing, and then the waves that brought him all the way from over there to over here, to where he came to lie face down in the sand, in the frame, with the water and the sand and the golden hues from the sun that he will never, ever see again. 11. Blink again. 12. Put down the image. 13. Fold up your hands like a portable picnic table and put them in your pocket. 14. Recall thinking, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Kia
ora. My name's Hera Lindsay Bird, and I've got 3 poems to read today. The first is from a Palestinian poet called Dalia Taha, and it's called "The Man and His Girlfriend Who Argued All of Last Night and Now Stand at a Pharmacy in Our City to Buy Medication for Headaches." Look, over there. The sea isn't visible yet, though we've been driving for 2 hours. Though we've begun to feel its hot, moist air through our clothes are sticking to our bodies. In the car, we eat grapes and don't talk, as if the sweat oozing from our bodies is how we communicate now, how our souls trade words or strikes. We're on Highway 6. I'm on the phone, making sure we didn't take the wrong exit. You're asking me to pass you something, and with the same heads that cross the checkpoint, the same neutral expressions that waited while the soldier looked over our papers, we turn to take in the empty hills, completely empty. There's nothing that speaks of the Arab villages. I note and you nod your beautiful head. Even the silence that envelops the scene after a massacre and never leaves it, the silence that clings to the rocks and trees and is released by the soil like fumes, that particular kind of heavy silence. You know what I mean. You sense it when you visit the hills of Rwanda or Bosnia. You feel it instantly. You don't understand how it happens exactly, but you move backwards as though you aren't stepping on grass, but on the gasps of the dead. As if what extends from the trees aren't branches, but the dead's last words, standing upright, crows alighting on them. They tried to get rid of the silence with highways and the thrum of moving cars. They tried skillfully to remove everything, then they tossed their white gloves on the grass. I feel like I'm performing, like nothing about what I'm doing is real, as if what I'm wearing underneath my clothes isn't a bathing suit, but a ghost. No one can return to those villages, to the hillside. It's over forever. This is a fixed truth. I realise this on the way to the sea, and a strange grief fills me. The sea that isn't visible yet, as if it too knows and has disappeared, and nothing but the sweat oozing from our bodies tells us it's there. And because words between us have come to an end, without saying it out loud, together we long to meet it, while the white gloves on the hills slowly grow into poisonous flowers. The next one is called Obadiah the Cow, and it's by Alam Sharat. We had a cow, Obadiah the Cow. She had big wide eyes, but the whole herd had big wide eyes. She was dappled, but the rest of them were dappled. She had two large udders that gave two or three buckets of milk, but every other cow in the herd had full udders. My mum milked them for the same amount. Most of the time, Obadiah had snot running down her nose, and that was disgusting and pervasive in the herd we owned. Their nostrils were snot-filled. And whenever we took her calf away from under her, Obadiah used to shed tears like human tears. And that was the case for the rest of the cows. Whenever we took their calves away from them, they cried like humans might. Obadiah used to suffer too and would low a painful moo. The whole herd could do this and rip our hard cords apart, send us into hiding under blankets as if taking cover from a night monster until daybreak. At daybreak, we'd declare our safe presence by taking a piss out in the open, one after the other, a natural rite of passage, as the sun recited her hymns overhead. Then into the plains we kids would go, unafraid of being lost, where we'd been in a previous life. We knew even the smallest rocks, the yellow snakes, their crossing time, and in our mouths we held a piece of bread each, and in each hand a thin stick off the corpse of the poppy plant we used to call the bitter orange bush. We would run, brandishing our sticks, with Obadiah and the entire herd ahead of us, and alongside them, our dog, Camel. And I've just got one more to read today, which is by someone called Zachariah Muhammad, and it's an untitled poem, Untitled 3. People are asses. I hang bells from their necks so they can sing to me while I recline on a rock. People are fools. I'll hang them up in the wardrobe like winter clothes. Maize barley is about to ripen. Each stalk has lined up its seeds in orderly fashion so they can stand at the gate of heaven. I can line up words without meaning. I can create meaning from nothingness. Meaning is orderliness. Meaning is coincidence. Meaning is a beast of burden hauling watermelons. If only I could line things up like a stalk of barley does. Barley takes its own life in May, and wheat opens its mute mouth in June. My time is the end of August. At end of August, my trigger snaps. Oh, if only I could live in a glass of water, my roots white, my hair green, and the sun my only god. I have one song I keep repeating. I have one great lie I've attached to the ceiling with tape so that the flies of truth will stick to it. My head is a huge balloon. My hand is a destitute star. The knife, a painful simplicity I do not possess, and when I arrive at meaning, it is lost to me. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
You have been listening to Books Uncovered, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
For more information about hosting events or becoming a member of the Athenaeum Library, please visit our website, dunedinathenaeum.org.nz. or come in and visit us in the Lower Octagon. Our opening hours are Tuesday to Wednesdays, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. and Thursdays, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m.
To listen again to this episode or to find other podcasts in the series, look for Books Uncovered on oar.org.nz or your favourite podcast platform.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.